who are you to tell me what to do kind of a mentality, because I'm free and I'm my own person, which in some ways in the Bible that challenges us. But the Bible is not a democracy. You know, it's what God says is what is. It's not up for a vote or for our opinion. And so in the conversation, I also ask for the benefit of the doubt. There's probably going to be things that are said that can be taken in a good way or can be taken in a bad way. Please take it with a good way, because I would in no way try to demean women or offend. And I know in this society, politically correct and all that, I stumble with that quite a bit, because I'm not politically correct. Not that I try to be offensive, it's just I can be, and it's not intentional. So with this, our culture has come into play significantly, and I think we as a church, I guess I'm not speaking of Old Town Christian Fellowship, but the church as a whole, it would seem, has tried to accommodate this push from the world in try to appear nice or to get along, and we're not actually called to get along. We're supposed to live peaceably when we can, but again, we got to stand on truth. And so, in the '60s, this is when this really became an issue. And you know, we have the women's liberation movement and feminism going on, and those in and of themselves were not bad, right? Equality for women and the right to vote and all these things. There's nothing wrong with that. That's all good. But then that push came into the church, and in some ways I think it's good, because it creates some questioning, and where do you stand on this? What does the Bible actually teach on these things? So it forces some study and some reflection. But it's important also to remember that these things that we'll go over tonight, they apply to the church, and they apply to the family, they apply to the home. They do not necessarily apply outside the church. We as a church are called to be a light to the world. We're called to be different, to be peculiar. And so in this way, we stand out very much so. I mean, it was an interesting story. They came to talk to Betsy. Betsy was just sharing that there's some things that I would take issue with and that we might have to work out. And her question was, well, if your husband doesn't like it, what will happen? And Betsy's answer was, well, then we won't do it. And she was confused by that and maybe a little offended. But you see, there's this turmoil in what goes on in the church and what goes on outside of the church. But outside of the church, women leaders and, you know, to run for president or to run companies and all that, that's all good. It's a separate deal. But likewise, we shouldn't take the things of the world and try to incorporate them into what God has set in order. And some of these things are hard to take. We don't necessarily like them, but it is what it is. Let's go to 2 Timothy. I'm sorry, 1 Timothy 2. Sorry. And as we've been taught, as Pastor Brian has gone through this with us, Paul is writing to Timothy, and Timothy is in Ephesus, and there's a lot of confusion and false teaching, disorder, and in that society, it is very secular. And in some of what we will, you know, get into, it has to do with some of the pagan worship and the things that are going on in that society that, again, are coming into that body and are confusing or causing disorder in the church. And so Paul is writing this letter to Timothy in that. And I'm going to jump, you don't have to go there, but I'm going to go to chapter 3, verse 14, where Paul is basically telling Timothy why he's writing these things. He says, "These things I write to you, though I hope to come to you shortly, but if I am delayed, I write so that you may know how you ought to conduct yourself in the house of God, which is the church of the living God, the pillar and ground of the truth." And so this is why he's writing this. He's trying to address these issues that are going on in the church, and to help Timothy set these things in order. And in some, elsewhere, we read that Timothy might be a little timid. It might be hard for him to take these stands. So Paul's, come on, Timothy, we got to take the stand. We, you know, to defend the truth. So let's jump in. And I forgot my glasses, so bear with me. And with this whole format, please jump in, because I think it'll be kind of fun, actually, to have some conversation on this or to question these things. And Dan, not just for the sake of making it challenging, we want... Well, you too, Pastor Brian. But anyhow, we'll jump right in at verse 8. Okay, my subtitle says Men and Women in the Church. I desire, therefore, that the men pray everywhere, lifting up holy hands without wrath and doubting. So that seems pretty straightforward, though it kind of does speak to 8, right? 1 Timothy chapter 2, 8. Okay. And so it would appear that these men, and maybe us, we men, have a tendency to pray in wrath and doubting. So that's being addressed. We need to chill out, guys. And when it says, verse 9, in like manner also, that the women adorn themselves in modest apparel, with propriety and moderation, not with braided hair or gold or pearls or costly clothing, but which is proper for women professing godliness with good works. So here we go, right out of the gate. We're picking on the ladies' clothing in the latest fashion and what's going on, right out of the gate. And I know in the Braley household, this has been conversed many a time, right, with 3 daughters. And good-willed people have brought this verse to my attention. And so what is he saying? Is it wrong to braid your hair? Kara, your hair, is it braided a little bit? Is that wrong? Huh? No, it's not. Susan's is, ava, Susan. We expected more. No, is that what it's saying? Is it wrong to braid your hair? Is it wrong to wear jewelry? No, of course not. So what do we have here? And it's been consistent about all the hard topics, or most of the hard topics that we've taught. It's a matter of the heart, right? And so in this environment, you had a few things going on, but you had pagan worship and all, and then there was the temple prostitutes would come into town, and that was all part of their worship. And so there was that element that some of these people were coming from. And women were also finding a newfound freedom that used to be they just kind of had to stay in their tents or their homes and out of sight, out of mind, and you just deal with the home stuff, and you had no place in the public or anything to do with the public. So, but there was a newfound freedom that they were starting to experience, and much of it through Christianity. And so you had a mix of that, and you also had these wealthy women who would come in with lots of jewelry and really dressed to the nines, as we would say, in drawing attention to themselves. And I believe that's what Paul is talking about here, is everything in moderation. It says it to be in moderation, and to check, you know, what's your motive when you're dressed a certain way? Is it for attention, or is it, for attention, or is it just, okay, I like these, and that's great. But he's teaching to consider, particularly the opposite sex, that unfortunately for you women, men are visual, and we pick up on those things. And the heart is, when we come to gather to worship God, our focus should not be on ladies, you know, or what they are or are not wearing. And so it's more a thing of the heart in consideration for the men, and also for God, that there's not a distraction to the worship, because we're gathered to worship God and not to draw the attention of others. And so again, it's a heart issue, not necessarily these items, but it pertains to that day. So then on to verse 11, and here's a fun one. Let a woman learn in silence with all submission. Any takers? What does that mean? Well, I'm curious what people think it means. Yeah. What is that? It's a controversial word in our society. But in studying this, somebody never realized before, and it's unfortunate, but the word that is translated into silence is actually the same word that in the beginning of chapter 2, verse 2, it says, you know, that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and reverence. And that peaceable, it's the same word that is used here in silence. And so with that, we could say like quarrelsome, or to cause disruption, to cause division, whatever, because there was another thing that it appears was happening at this time, that there was disruption. You know, women might get up and start asking questions. They may be legit, or they may be putting the pressure on the leadership. And so basically, to learn and to be peaceable in this environment, and all submission. I'm going to keep going, add this to it. And I do not permit a woman to teach or to have authority over man, but to be in silence. For Adam was formed first, then Eve. And Adam was not deceived, but the woman was deceived. I fell into transgression. Nevertheless, she will be saved in childbearing if they continue in faith, love, and holiness with self-control. Some of these things I think Paul wrote thinking, 1,000 years from now, when they're studying this stuff, they're going to have a real hard time with this, because like that's a tough one to expound on. But we'll try. So again, let's go back. So let women learn in silence with all submission, and I do not permit a woman to teach or to have authority over a man, but to be in silence. So what are we to take to that? Can a woman not speak in church? Or if this applies to the home life too, what's that? How's that apply at home? You know? But the crazy thing is some of this is just taken to that extreme, you know, and that's why some of this, the tension that this topic brings is legitimate, because these texts have been abused to control, in which my understanding, and I believe, is totally outside of the will of God and what he is setting in order here. There's something here. So it says to be in silence. But if we go to, I think it's 14. If we go to 1 Corinthians 14, verse 34, it says, let your women keep silent in the churches. Whoops, that's not the right one. That was just another backup verse for that. Way to go. Oh, I'm sorry. 11:5. 1 Corinthians 11, verse 5. It says, but every woman who prays or prophesies with her head uncovered dishonors her head. Okay, and we'll get into this later. So if they're supposed to be silent, then how come here he's making reference to them praying and prophesying? This is in the context of the church. So does Paul contradict himself? Is he teaching one thing to one group of people and something else to another? Can't hear you, Nick. Right, peaceable. Yeah, that's well, that in the context, is, I think that would be correct, right? Argumentative in the. Well, another point in this is this text is viewed as keeping women down, but just the fact that he says let a woman learn is profound, because in this time that was a new concept. Women weren't educated, they weren't allowed to. They were very much low and really not considered much. So, to go on next thing, so it's not to be controversial, it's not to stir things up. There's supposed to be order in the church, you know. But then he goes, I do not permit a woman to teach or to have authority over a man, but to be in silence. So right there, right, that stings, right, in today's culture. And in some Jewish writings, it was a waste of time. Like, don't even bother teaching the ladies these things. And so you're right. So for them to even be educated is new. There's a lot of new freedoms that these people are experiencing in the church. But as we know in our own country, right, there's freedom, but there are still laws. There's still order. And to remember that is what Paul is addressing here. He's addressing order, that the gatherings are chaotic and they're disruptive and that something is awry. So from what he's directing here, one would assume that there was, we'll say unruly, I don't know what the right word, women, and it's causing chaos in the church service. And so he's saying to address that. But it would appear that there's more, right? To teach or to have authority over a man. And it is, there's probably some ladies in this room like, what's with this? You know, a woman not to teach or have authority over a man. What gives man the right to have that? But socially, right, that's a tough thing. In our society, it's a very, very difficult thing. And when you go and talk to the folks outside the church, like we're viewed as archaic, old-fashioned, domineering. But with that, it's out of balance, right? Because there's a male side to this equation as well that we haven't gotten into. So you're right. Adam was formed first, then Eve. And Adam was not deceived, but the woman, being deceived, fell into transgression. Nevertheless, she will be saved in childbearing if they continue in faith, love, and holiness with self-control. And so here we go, Paul setting some order. Right? So he takes it all the way back to the fall. Like, we can talk about these cultural things that were going on, and they were certainly factors, and we have the same issues that come into the church now. You know, we deal with a lot of things to, you know, not just male-female equality, but gender, sexual identity. You know, these kind of things are the major players in our world, and we have to figure out, where do we stand? What does the Bible say? Where does God stand on this? And then we have to stand. And So I see what Paul is doing here is he's taking it out of the cultural, and he's taking it all the way back to the beginning. He's going to Genesis. And it is the woman was deceived. Satan deceived the woman. But what is interesting is that is not where sin came from, right? Adam is responsible for sin, right? The first Adam, the second Adam. So Adam willingly sinned. He knew exactly what he was doing and sinned. And from that, we all suffer the consequences of sin. Not because of Eve's sin, but because of Adam's sin. And so there again, there's this, well, then why are men called elite? Right? If sin came through our disobedience, why does God call us to lead? I wonder that. That's a real question. Why does he call us to lead? He's taking it back to Genesis, and we'll get into it further. I won't get into submission because that is a people don't people, what's that? Yeah, it is. Well, that's to do this in one sitting is very challenging. It's very tough. Absolutely, and if we get into 1 Corinthians, that's where that heads, and it's kind of self-destructive, but absolutely, because, I mean, I'm trying to make sure I got the chronology right, but I believe the instruction was given to Adam, then Eve. Adam instructed Eve, so that came that way, right, and Eve was made for Adam, right, as a helpmeet. And so there's this order that is established in creation and in marriage that really is the foundation of all these things. Because there are, and I struggled which way to go with this, is to try to pick the arguments against the Bible. And it's, as you can see, I struggled which way to go with it, and I was just curious what was going to come to light, because some say that, you know, this verse was because it was a dealing with false teachers, in that the women were being manipulated by men to teach falsely, or these women had money, and so they were manipulated for their money and given positions to in church and whatnot, or air quotes church. And that's what Paul was addressing here, not women over all time. But that just doesn't seem to fit, because if that was the case, there were also male false teachers, and he doesn't have the same restriction on them, right? And so you're absolutely right. There's the usurping of the authority that is given to man by God. And unfortunately, you see that happening a lot, and it's very destructive, not only within the church, but within our society as a whole. But verse 15, nevertheless, she fell into transgression. I'm sorry, nevertheless, she will be saved in childbearing if they continue in faith, love, and holiness with self-control. Any takers on that one? So, right, it's So childbearing, I mean, but what about women? They can't bear children. Right? So it can't be that, right? Because salvation comes through Christ, not through childbearing. And that's one of the arguments, that's part of it. Or there's an argument that it speaks to the Messiah, you know, that through woman, right, through the promise in Genesis that the Messiah would come through the woman. But this is post-Christ, right? And so now how does that work? And again, I kind of personally, I look at it as there's the different roles, the male female roles, in largely through childbearing in the raising of the children. I think Christianity is really it perpetuates that's men are called to lead and all these things, but it's typically the mom who's putting in a lot of these nuggets of truth and instilling these things in the kids. And it's in that it perpetuates the church, the growth of the church, and this foundation that needs to be laid, you know, this foundation of truth. So I don't know as I take it as saved as in salvation. I think it has more to do with the woman's role. The man is called to lead in the church and to lead in the family, but the childbearing piece is part of the woman's role. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 11, and we're not going to get to it. Verse 3, chapter 11, 1 Corinthians 11, 3. But I want you to know that the head of every man is Christ, the head of woman is man, and the head of Christ is God. And so, and this speaks to that whole usurping, right? So we have here this relationship that the head of every man is Christ, right? So man is subject to Christ, the head of woman is man, and then the head of Christ is God, so Christ is subject to God. And so we have this hierarchy again established in the Word, and, you know, or ordained by God. This is God's order, is what Paul is addressing here. Verse 4, every man praying or prophesying, having his head covered, dishonors his head. But every woman who prays or prophesies with her head uncovered, dishonors her head. For that is one and the same as if her head were shaved. And so, this a lot of this is tough because this isn't our world. We don't deal with head coverings and all these sorts of things. So I'm going to kind of give you the down and dirty on it. My understanding of it is that a man who covers himself is like pushing aside the authority that God has given him, that he is to take that role of leadership and to stand and to pray that way. But the woman who is under the headship of man, to show that reverence or respect for that authority, would wear a veil or a head covering. And again, this culturally for us, we don't do this. But again, it goes more to the heart of in this relationship of the understanding that men are called to lead in the church and in the home. And so for this to work, God has set this up, and for this to work, the woman should, we're going to say submit, should yield to that authority that God has given. And it's not always easy, because some of us are numb, or we bumble, or we're just bad, and it's hard to follow us. And so you young ladies, be very selective on who you pick, because when it comes to marriage, that's relationship. God has set that in motion, and that is what works. That will promote a healthy family. You don't want to lead the man, or you don't want him to lay down. But then also, guys, it's upon us to take that authority and to lead, and to commune with God, to be in the Word, to know the things that we're called to do, and to have the backbone to stand, even when society is saying what we're doing is wrong, or that we're domineering or cold-hearted or whatever, but to stand. If the Word of God says it, it's true, and you take a stand. And then it's also important to understand the role of women and how God sees them. Because Caleb, I'm going to ask you this, because girls or women are special, right? Sorry, I should have set you up better. I don't know how many times I've told that. What's that? Right? Girls are special, and men are always to teach women as special. I fail as a dad. No. But it's critical for us to understand that. Like Trevor, like, my daughter's special, right? Not just because she's my daughter, because she's a girl, right? Men are to honor women and to treat women special and to come to their defense. And I know even to say that in today's society is a taboo. Well, I can take care of myself. But it's not the point. It's the same with like opening a door and like, I can get my own door. Well, it's not the point. It's reverent. It's honoring, you know. Do we talk about submission? It's submitting, you know, to allow and to treat them as special. And in the push in society has twisted that and has taken this out of balance, in that now, right, the women's rights and all this kind of stuff, and then the women's rights in and of themselves is not wrong, but there's this militant piece now that is causes division and disruption and harm. And it's not only in women, but it's down to, you know, race and political views and all this stuff. It's all very, very divisive, and it's gone over the top in our society, and it's not what God has called us to. And in this push, and again, this is just my opinion, but this push to promote feminism, I believe women are the biggest losers. Because in the defiance, and I'm self-made and all this, and men are the winners. Men get to go have their fun, and then they go act like little boys. They never grow up. And mom is left raising a child alone, or multiple children alone. And dad's playing, and it's not what God had designed. So it's not that women are weaker. It's not that they're less. This whole unit is by God's design, and it's how it works. When you have both, it works. And so in different ways, we have the same struggle in the body, or in society, and we need to stand against it. And in this usurping of the authority of man, there's a couple things that go on there. One, you're undermining the man that you're called to help, right? Because God said it's not good that he's alone. He needs some help. So he gave him woman, right? So, and it's important that we take advantage of that relationship, men, or even as leadership in the church, to listen to the women, that they bring balance. They bring a perspective that we don't necessarily have. But the usurping is undermines the man, and to the point that he gives up And so you want the man to be this way, and you're trying to make him a certain way, and you're over here trying to manipulate, and he just gives up. And now you're stuck with another child or just someone who's vacant. He's just not engaged. But as we read here, the more serious offense is that the glory of man is Christ. And so when you try to circumvent, now all of a sudden you're trying to take the role that where Christ is supposed to sit. And that's not good. And it, in our society, this is so, it is crazy that it has to be a tough topic, because it's perfect order, how God has set it. This God, Christ, man, woman, children, church, and there's a way that works, right? And it's, you know, to head to Portland, you don't go to Holton. Right, there's directions, there's right ways to do things, and that's what I feel Paul is putting in order. Yes. That's what I'm saying. This is so big. This, because we didn't get into Ephesians. We just got into this. We're out of time. And and it does. And that's how it's supposed to work. But there's a degree of humility, though, because, right, Christ submitted the authority of the Father, right? They're equal, but he took the lower role, right, to die for us. So this submission, that God is looking for willing servants, those who willingly give up. Those are who God uses. So this submission isn't a bad thing. You know, it's, you want to be wise to who you submit to. But we are called to submit. We're called to submit to one another, right? And I believe it's in Philippians. We're called to submit to one another and to revere one another. This isn't a bad thing. And the submission doesn't mean this domineering and strong-arming of women. Because there is the balance piece. Men are called to love, you know, to love their bride. Well, then, and to defend the body as a whole. And I was pointing out to Betsy, though, in Ephesians, where it talks how men are to lay down their lives as Christ laid down his for the church. There doesn't seem to be much controversy on that one. You know what I mean? That seems to be easily received. And this is too much to do in one setting. Because there's more. Because, I mean, it appears as harsh, these things that Paul is writing. But then he goes back, you know, to, you know, creation, you know, Adam and then Eve and then that union in marriage. But then he closes this out that, but if it weren't for women, men wouldn't exist. And vice versa, we need one another. It's not that one is less needed than another. We all have a role. It all comes down to a role. We have responsibilities, and when we walk in those paths, it works. There is this balance, you know, men play a very significant role, and if we're doing what we're called to do, it's very easy to submit, it's very easy to follow. But when we're self-serving, it's wise for women to shirk that. And I mean, there didn't get to any of the in the Bible. I mean, there are prophetesses, right? In the Old Testament, there are women that were used mightily, you know, that God used. But it was never in leadership over men. The patriarchal system has been set from the beginning. So there's always that, but women have significant roles in the church and in the furtherance of the gospel, even in modern day. And we read of them in the New Testament. You know, you look at the women, they were following Christ, they were supporting Christ, and, you know, he used them as examples, and they were at the cross, right? They ran, right? The men ran, and then they came to tend to his body, right? They had faith. They were strong. They were out there doing it. But nevertheless, Christ chose men. He chose disciples that were men. And so even in that, he still chose men to lead. Though looking from the outside in, it's like, well, these ladies had it way more together and understood what was going on way more than these men. So it's just another one of those. And in that, but it still doesn't mean, like, women can teach, right? Women can teach in the church. They can, in.
I just think of the Apollos. He was mighty in the scriptures, right? Well, he knew the baptism. He only knew the baptism of John. And he was eloquent in the scripture, but he went to Priscilla and Aquila for teaching on other things. Mm-hmm. That blows my mind.
Right. Well, and Priscilla, a female, right, it would appear, she always appears first and would appear to be more in the lead, right? But she was used in, read Romans 16, and he's going through and thanking all these people and calling them out, and there are a ton of women who served with him, who fought with him, you know, in the defense of the gospel. And so this is all disjointed, and I apologize. But so the role of women in the church is not to be some heels and to sit in the corner and speak when spoken to kind of a thing. God created us, male and female. We all have a role. The leadership of the church is for men. God has called us to lead. And sometimes I wonder why women want it. Because it's not really, I wouldn't call it fun. Because it's in this added responsibility, like with that authority, this responsibility, this added accountability, this heaviness to all of that, and it's not like we can just run amok and do whatever whenever. There are guidelines for us in the Word, and you know, women. Naturally, they tend to be more into the children's thing, but women can teach women. And I believe that women can teach in the body, but under the headship of the leadership of the church. I personally believe that that role is for men, but women can address and can speak. It's not this, you know, the veil covering and all this tamped down. God has made women to do great things, and we read it in the scriptures, and we see it in modern day. And it's not that women are less and men are more important. We just have different roles, right? If one of your kids grows up to be a lawyer, and the next one, you know, they end up, they work at Hannaford at the checkout line, and that's what they do their whole life. You know, do you tell that child, remember, you're a good kid and all, but you're less than your sibling because they're a lawyer, right? Or your team, or on a team, you know, your kid doesn't actually happen to make the captain position. Do you tell your child that you're good and whatever, but remember, you're less than because you're not captain? You're not as good a person. We don't do that. Right? That's because it's not true. It's not how it is. And nor is it in the church. We have different roles, but of equal value. And at the end of the day, the same price was paid for a male heart as was paid for the female heart. So in Christ, I agree, but I believe, but then there's the outside world. If everybody's doing their role, what they're called to do, it works very well. But it is, and is this Paul is addressing here, we have a culture around us. And so to find that balance and it to be viewed as less, you know, and so we have a fight ahead of us to stand and to communicate those things, but more so to live it out. You know, huh? Yeah. But we should be living it out, to be salt and light in our marriages, in our, you know, in our families, and in this church. You know, the church is called to be different, and we should stand out in that regard and stand on truth.